everyone. I'm Dr. Terry, and this is the Love Doctor program on Empower Radio, the show that gives you the facts about relationships and love. Now, I've been helping individuals and couples improve their relationships for the past 30 years, and today I'm here to give you science-based strategies for your relationships and those of your children. Welcome, everyone. It's Dr. Terry. Thanks so much for joining me today. I appreciate you. I have another great program for you today. It's all about common struggles and challenges that couples face and how to navigate those challenges. My guest today is Linda Carroll. Linda is a teacher, a board-certified life coach, and a licensed marriage and family therapist who has been working as a psychotherapist for over 35 years. She is also the author of the new book called Life Skills, The Keys to Unlocking Lasting, Wholehearted Love. And for more information about Linda or her new book, please go to lindaacarroll.com. Welcome to the program, Linda. So wonderful to have you with us today.
Oh, it's so good to be here. I loved our conversation at the beginning. I know this is going to be a great interview.
I know. Listeners, we had a little conversation offline that we will definitely fill you in on, but already I loved talking to you, Linda. Now, as I mentioned in the introduction, you've worked as a therapist and couples coach for over three decades. Tell us, what types of clients do you work with generally?
Well, I started as a marriage counselor, and the couples who came in at that time were really, I would call it, on sort of death's door of relationship. You know, they were really struggling in just about every single way. But what is so exciting is that over the years that I've been doing it, it's about 36 years now, more and more couples come in because they realize that they want the skills before things do fall off the cliff. And so I see a lot of couples who say, we care about this relationship and we know that there's going to be inevitable conflict. How can we set ourselves up for it ahead of time so that when it comes, we're able to manage it? So that's a very exciting change in the work that I'm doing.
I like that. You know, I've seen that too, Linda, where at the beginning, people didn't want the skills. They would only come if there was a problem. And now I think it's wonderful that couples want to enrich, improve, and learn the skills you call love skills that are needed to have a happy, healthy relationship over time.
And I think, Terry, that part of it is that that's a new realization. And I realized it years ago, but didn't really have words for it, which is kind of how the book got started. But I realized that so many of the couples that I was seeing when I started all those years ago, decades ago now, really had, it wasn't that they had something wrong with them, although they were in quote therapy. It wasn't that there was something wrong at all. It was that they lacked the skills to manage normal life stresses and normal differences between couples. And that if they could learn skills, that they would be able to practice those skills, and so much of what was wrong or not working could get better.
I like that. Normal common differences, normal common struggles. It's almost as if we could teach students in high school and college, which I try to do at the university level, these skills even before they get into relationships. What would that mean, Linda?
I have two answers to that. I think that that's a great idea. And I think that knowing what to expect and understanding that's how important skills are, certainly, I mean, kids in junior high, I have two granddaughters that are 12 and 13, and there's always drama with their girlfriends, but they know more about skills than I certainly did. So I think that's great. But Terry, the other thing is that when we fall in love, we are so downloaded with those chemicals, with those brain changes, that we really feel like we don't need them. You know, I've been teaching classes for 30 years it's had different names, love skills. It was the Paris course. I'm an Imago therapist. I've been teaching all different kinds of classes, and I welcome people with any trouble to come into the classes. But I'm going to tell you, this is not between you and I because it's on the air. But the
secret, everyone, a big secret. Go ahead, Linda.
The hardest couples are not the ones in trouble. They're the ones who are newly in love because they come in and feel like they've cracked the code, not realizing that they're full of love potion. And so they're kind of nudging each other like these poor people. We know the secret because we found the perfect relationship. They're the hardest couples to work with because they haven't really gotten into the foxholes yet. And it takes a few years for those chemicals to wear off to realize that some of the very things you fall in love with are the things that are going to annoy you. And so,
I agree with you completely, Linda. And there's science-based, research to show exactly what you're saying. So what do you tell those couples, Linda, who have that love potion, who have all that adrenaline and that arousal going and that honeymoon aura? What do you tell those couples?
Well, they don't come around me because they feel sorry for everyone else. But sometimes I see people who are older, who have been through it and have been through the love potion and know that it wears off. And sometimes people will come in a really good place without the I call it infinity loops, without the repeated patterns, and say, we want some help. But usually in the first stage, people don't come into a therapist. Unless they're having trouble, outside of the relationship. Right. But I think coaching, one of the things I love about coaching, and one of the reasons I added that to what I do, is that it gives people more permission to go to a coach because that doesn't imply something is wrong. Whereas therapy, there's still that old sort of, that old sort of silent idea that if you go to a therapist, you're admitting that things aren't perfect, which of course we know things are never going to be perfect.
Right. Things are never going to be perfect. And you don't have to have that problem focus. It's so interesting, Linda, because we are so similar. I was a therapist for many, many years and have added coaching as well to my practice because of exactly what you're referring to, that people feel more comfortable and you can work with the present and the skills and then go forward. So it's not focused on the problems and way back and unpacking those problems. It's focusing on the problems. So my clients are different, but I'm so different as well. Now let's turn to your book, Love Skills. You mention in the book that relationships develop in these predictable stages. And each of these stages has its own challenges. What are some of the predictable or common struggles that couples face? Give us some examples.
Okay, so the first stage, which I call the merge, is when we fall in love. And one of the things I say to people is, and it's counterintuitive to what we learn in the cliches that are out, don't trust only your heart. Because if you just trust your heart, some of us, when we feel our heart is speaking about a particular partner, that needs to be a sign to run the other way. I mean, for some people, our heart leads us into messes again and again and again. We need what we feel is one thing, and it is not unimportant. And what we may feel is madly in love with somebody, but there are other things that we need to be in a relationship that works other than feeling. We need skill. We need character. We need somebody who has the willingness and the will to be able to learn those skills, to manage themselves. When we can fall in love with a person who is totally incompatible in all kinds of ways, we can also fall in love with a narcissistic person who does not even have a capacity to care about somebody else. So it's the feeling is great, but it's not enough to just feel. We need other kinds of data that don't come from the emotional center.
I love that, Linda. Let me just recap that for listeners, because that's so important. Love is wonderful. Those feelings are amazing, but you can't only have love. So don't trust only your heart, you said. There are other things like skill and character and motivation and compatibility that are also important as you make these decisions about relationships. I really like that. You said that so well. Tell us about another common struggle then.
And during that time, the first stage?
Or maybe another stage. Now that we're together, we've merged, so to speak. Would be another stage and a struggle in another stage?
Well, the first part of that merge is feeling sometimes like we found our other half. And when the chemicals wear off and when the things we fell in love with, some of those qualities start to annoy us and we move into what I call the power struggle or the next stage, I think that one of the important things to remember is that, one, nobody is my other half. I don't have another half. I am actually whole. And that power struggles are normal, that the other person is not me. I mean, isn't that what happens at the beginning, is that we talk in all the ways we fit and then we romanticize the ways we don't? And so what begins to happen is we realize, you know, we don't fit in all these ways. My husband and I have been together for 35 years, and I actually said to him these words. I said, I'd love to be on a desert island with you. Well, now we are.
Right.
And I've had this realization, is that he does not notice the inside of the house, and I don't really notice the outside. He's a gardener, and he's a guy who loves to be out in the woods. He loves to go for walks and bike rides and hikes. I could spend a whole weekend in my room and reading and writing. And so he has made a beautiful garden. We live in a park, and I'm really grateful, but I have to remind myself to notice, because I don't naturally go there. Whereas he doesn't notice if there's things spread all over the house. He doesn't pay attention. And he pays attention to what's going on with his cherry tree.
And now, is this the first time that you've noticed this, Linda, during the COVID-19 challenges?
No, but it's always been something we've laughed about. But Now we are in this desert island that I longed for together. We're not getting off the island. And now those things are starting to irritate us. He says, do you ever look at the daffodils? Or I say, do you notice that when you don't put away the dishes, it makes the kitchen look really chaotic? But so it's like those, I mean, these are little tiny things, but they're an example of, I fell in love with this great outdoors person, and he fell in love with this woman who could recite poetry and was always searching for the meaning of life. And those were great things. But now that we're stuck together on the island that we longed for, suddenly I'm annoyed that he doesn't remember to put the milk back in the fridge, or that I don't notice that is what's going on in the pond is the greatest thing in the world. And I'm grateful that he brings that to me, but I also don't want to get interrupted when I'm in the middle of a book, and because I'm, you know, we're coping. So those ways that are different that attracted us also have another side to them. And what we were talking about really was power struggles, how we're different. It's normal. Everybody, every couple struggles and has power struggle, but they're not very sexy. We don't write music about them unless it's really bad. So this, I think the second counterintuitive move is to know that everybody is impossible at certain moments, and that there's a way that there's no couple that really fits totally. So when we hit those places where we don't fit, where we hit those places, then it's not that there's something wrong. It's just that we're in a different stage of relationship.
That is so interesting, because that is really going against people's common sense notions about relationships. And I love it, because what you're saying, listeners, is that all couples, partners have differences, and that is typical. That is common. So Linda, when we come to those stages where we recognize the differences, where we say yes, or we see yes, my partner and I are different, how do we manage those? How do we not say to ourselves, this is not the relationship for me, or I can't take this difference, it's too much? How do we manage all of that?
Well, I think that the most important part is to know yourself. and to know where you're triggered, so that if I have a particular proclivity, if I'm particularly sensitive to feeling disconnected, and my partner and I have a great walk, and then he goes off and reads a book, it doesn't mean he doesn't care about me. It means he needs more private time than I do. Or to understand that, or to understand, you know, one of the ways that people, I think, get triggered is sometimes people are pretty defensive and are very vulnerable around criticism. And when we're living together in such close quarters all the time, we're going to be critical of each other. It's just not, you know, it's not anything that is, it doesn't mean someone's wrong, but some of us are very sensitive to criticism. That's another trigger to know that I may hear, if my partner says, "Hey, I thought you were going to make the salad tonight." What I hear is not, "I forgot to make the salad," but, "I'm really a worthless person." So that's something I have to know about myself, because we all have to work with our own limitations. And that's one of the gifts that a relationship can bring us, is being able to manage where we're vulnerable so we don't put it on our partner.
So I think, how do we know where we're vulnerable, though? Do we do some self-awareness? Or what advice, for example, do you have for people who tend to be defensive in their relationships? What should I do as an individual?
Well, those are two questions. The first question, how do I know where I'm vulnerable? I love the Enneagram. Do you ever work with the Enneagram?
No, I don't. Tell us more.
Well, the Enneagram is this fabulous sort of, I think it's the mother of all, or the father of personality tests. It's 2000 years old, but it really talks about different types of responding, different lenses that we see the world through. And so, however, some people love the Myers-Briggs, but whatever, I think looking at ourselves as being different from our partner, knowing we have a different lens than they do, that lens, knowing as much as we can about our own lens, whether it's through the Enneagram or something like the Enneagram, whether it's through understanding how our history sets us up to be vulnerable in certain ways, that is, I think, one of the most important qualities is to know thyself. That goes back. I mean, that's the basis of philosophical belief systems, isn't it? Who am I and how am I different than you? Because our partner is not us. So I'm going to have different sensitivities. And if I don't know what those are, I'm going to be a lot more vulnerable in the world in a way that's not healthy. I'm going to put on other people making me feel good about myself, rather than knowing I tend to be a little more defensive, or I tend to be a little more sensitive around being told what to do. Somehow that pushes something for me. You know, it doesn't mean it's wrong. I mean, I'm like that. If I'm in the kitchen and I'm cooking and my partner offers a really good suggestion, my first response is going to be, "Don't tell me what to do." Mm-hmm. Now, that's not his fault. That's something I have to work on, because there's nothing wrong with offering a suggestion. But I immediately react. Where am I reactive? That's one of the first, I think, rules of a good relationship, is to know where I'm overly sensitive. And we've all lived long enough to have history to know that some of what goes on in the relationship world of trouble is not just about the other person. So what's my part in it? So that's what I mean, acknowledge my triggers, just looking at our history.
I like that a lot, Linda, knowing your own personal triggers. And again, you know, listeners, triggers are these emotional reactions that change us, and that we're not just continuing forward as is, but we respond emotionally to whatever was said. And so knowing your triggers from your past, in your current situation with your current partner, is very important. And I also, like Linda, I say this all the time to everyone that will listen, you know, we are who we are. And so when we come to a relationship, what happens is just as much us as it is our partner. So we have to stop blaming partner in a way for what happens in a relationship and take responsibility for us in that part as well. Now, I have to move us forward because I know, Linda, you've been teaching this virtual class for couples, given the challenging times that we're going through these days with COVID-19. Share with us what's been the response to this virtual class, and what are you seeing in terms of how couples are dealing with COVID-19 and quarantine and lockdown and living with each other 24/7?
Okay. I think the response has been overwhelming, and I'm going to change the way that I've set up the virtual class because so many people need it. And so the first way I had myself meeting with people online and doing one-on-ones, but I think for some people that are out of work, that's really expensive right now. So I'm shifting that all around. And so I'm just asking people who are interested to go to my website and write me, and I'm figuring out what the biggest need is for people. But one of the things we need to learn in the classes is what the skills are and love skills that can help make this time better. Because here's what I'm seeing is that people are really struggling with the different ways that they manage stress. For some people, they want to watch the news all the time. And they may be with a partner that doesn't want to hear the news at all, or maybe looks at it once a day. And so, you know, for some people, so we can't make a rule about what we should do to get through this. I mean, we certainly a rule about not hurting other people and not taking out our anxiety, but what we do to calm ourselves. You know, I'll tell you something, this is all on air, but one of the things that I've been doing is watching reruns of The Godfather. And I have a girlfriend, she says, why aren't you watching meditations and closing your eyes and imagining you're on a lily pond? Because those make me anxious. And I watch The Godfather, and I watch, or I'm watching, you know, I'm watching films that have, and I realized a friend said to me, what is it about these films? And they really distract me. And I'm loving to watch movies where sort of the bad guys get taken off because that calms me. Now, that's not very mindful. If for a mindfulness love coach, that's not my own self-image around that. I had to work with that a lot. Like, why are you watching The Godfather? Why aren't you doing yoga? Which I also am. But there's a way it distracts me. There's a way that it carries me off into something, and it's okay. And I think that's what's really important is what are we doing with this time? And how are we managing our stress? And if we want to get lost in Law and Order and our partner wants to get lost in nature movies, that's not bad. And the same thing about music, you know, putting on, you know, I think that the tricky part here is remembering the basic law of relationship, Terry. You're not me. You're not me. And what you do to soothe yourself is going to be different than what I do to soothe myself. And these exaggerations, I mean, they're bigger than that. Some people are sort of already conscious of germs, and now they're spraying everything down they can. And there may be married to, or they may be with a partner or a roommate or living with someone that says, I can go to the grocery store. It's not a big deal. I just won't touch anybody. And they're scaring each other. Or driving each other apart. So we need to have skill to manage ourselves first. Where is it that my partner, is he really going for a walk? Is that going to endanger me? As opposed to, is he going off, you know, is he going off bike riding with a buddy? I mean, where is the danger level? Can we make an agreement on it that doesn't have to do with my own anxiety? It has to do with science. I mean, that's what I think is a basic way we can make agreements. Look at the data rather than what my feeling is. And I think that's how we worked out the grocery shopping is we.
Right.
Just,
right. I like that, Linda. You know, it's really, as I hear what you're saying, that there are these differences in how partners are dealing with stress. And that what you're suggesting is that we first understand ourselves, and then we understand our partner, and then come to some agreement between the two of us that differences are okay. And can we understand those differences? Is that what you're saying, Linda?
That's what I'm saying, and I'm saying that maybe a place to fall back on is science, is looking at what is the recommended way of managing this, for instance, in terms of going out and, you know, and not going on feeling so much. And I think that that's, you know, another example from my own relationship, which is my greatest teacher, is my partner relieved stress by riding his bike, and all of the bike paths now are closed. And I don't really put a lot of, I don't put a lot of energy into really giving him enough empathy about that, because for him, he's a guy who couldn't sit very still in school, and he wanted to be outside. And I am not, I appreciate nature, but I'm not called to being outside like he is. So another question we can ask ourselves, and this is a hard one, this is kind of the black belt of consciousness in relationship. We are aware of how our partner impacts us. How are we impacting them? When I am not really understanding how hard it is for him to not be out riding his bike in the forest, and I am minimizing that as a real issue, That's a way that I'm not being the best partner for him.
Right. And that's such a good message, Linda. Thank you so much. How are we impacting our partner? And how can we use empathy, listeners, to really understand our partner and our differences? You know, Linda, thank you so much for being with us today. I have learned a lot. And especially listeners, I think the most important message you've said is that differences in stress, especially during these times, are inevitable, and how can we use our love skills to continue to grow, improve, and thrive in our relationships. Thank you so much, Linda. It's been a pleasure talking with you today.
It's been wonderful to talk with you, Terry. Thank you.
And again, listeners, if you're interested in learning more about Linda Carroll or her new book called Love Skills, The Keys to Unlocking Lasting Wholehearted Love, or her virtual couples courses online, please go now to Linda A. Carroll, and at CARROLL. .com, LindaAcarroll.com. As always, thanks for listening. I appreciate you. I'm Dr. Terry, and this is the Love Doctor program on Empower Radio. I'm here always to help all your relationships, including the one with yourself, be the best they can be. My personal website is Dr. Terry, theLoveDoctor.com, where I provide you with science-based relationship advice that's easy to understand and include in your life. So listeners, until next time, be safe, be healthy, and here's to your happy, healthy relationships.